We're studying the book of Acts, the beginning of the Lord's church, how it started in Jerusalem in Acts chapter 2 and then spread. We've come now to Acts chapter 18, where Paul is on his second missionary journey. Recall in Acts chapter 17, he had a short stay at the city of Athens. Well, then from Athens, he travels west about 46 miles to the city of Corinth. Corinth was the most influential city in the province of Achaia. We would call it a cosmopolitan city. It was a mix of all kinds of religions and cultures, all kind of thrown together. Because of its location, it was also a great commercial center as well. And this was the city that hosted the Isthmian Games. Every 2 years, these were similar to our Olympic Games. But these were in honor of their god Poseidon. There were a lot of temples in the city as well. All over the city, you could see these temples. They just kind of dotted the town. One was to Asclepius, the god of healing. And, of course, probably the most famous was to Aphrodite. The latter is the one that was associated with large numbers, maybe as many as 1,000 temple prostitutes. The city was known for its immorality, for its evil and wickedness. In 1 Corinthians chapter 6, when Paul is writing to this city of Corinth, he tells them there in the church how some of them used to live. In 1 Corinthians chapter 6, beginning in verse 9, notice how Paul describes some of them. He says, "Do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. Neither fornicators, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor homosexuals, nor sodomites, nor thieves, nor covetous, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor extortioners will inherit the kingdom of God. And such were some of you." So when Paul comes to the city of Corinth, those are the kind of people that he meets. He meets idolaters and fornicators and adulterers and sodomites and thieves and homosexuals and drunkards and revilers. Those are the kind of people that lived in Corinth. Those are the kind of people he's preaching the gospel to. So Corinth, the next stop on Paul's second missionary journey. So in Acts chapter 18, looking at the first four verses, we see that Paul meets with a couple, Aquila and Priscilla. Acts chapter 18, verse 1. "After these things, Paul departed from Athens and went to Corinth. And he found a certain Jew named Aquila, born in Pontus, who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to depart from Rome, and he came to them. So because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them and worked, for by occupation they were tent makers. And he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath and persuaded both Jews and Greeks." So we see one of the first things that happens when he gets to Corinth is he finds this couple, Aquila and Priscilla. They are there because they had been expelled from Rome by Claudius. That was the Roman emperor at the time. And apparently they were already Christians, but they were Christians who had a Jewish background. This is the same couple that's mentioned several times in the New Testament. They were, we would say, instrumental in converting Apollos, that we'll see here in another chapter or two in the book of Acts. They were tent makers like Paul. And during the very beginning of his work in Corinth, Paul supported himself. And there may have been a lot of reasons for this. Maybe it was just to model a good work ethic. Don't know, the Bible doesn't say. Maybe it was just as a matter of principle. Well, while tent making, notice what Paul did though. Every Sabbath, it says, every Sabbath, he went to the synagogue and persuaded both Jews and Greeks. No doubt what he was doing was trying to get them to see who Jesus was. That he was the Messiah, that he was the Son of God, that he had been crucified and resurrected, So some of those things, no doubt, was what Paul would be trying to persuade the Jews and Greeks about. These first four verses, when we couple them with some of the other epistles that Paul wrote to various people and congregations, we see that a person preaching the gospel can be supported in a number of ways. We see, first of all, that he can be supported by his own means. That's what Paul was doing here at the very beginning of his work in Corinth. Now, that was going to change. But here at the beginning, he's supporting himself. When he wrote 1 Thessalonians, this is what he told them in the second chapter. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, and let's read verse 9. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 9, Paul says, "For you remember, brethren, our labor and toil, for laboring night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you, we preach to you the gospel of God." So he says, here's one way that a person can be supported. He can support himself by being bivocational, I think is what they call it now. But he worked as a tent maker. Then come the Sabbath, he would go into the synagogues and try to teach and preach the gospel to Jews and Greeks. That's not the only way from Paul's writings that a person can be supported. He can be supported by the ones that he's ministering to. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9, notice his words that he writes to the church at Corinth. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 6, Paul writes, "Or is it only Barnabas and I who have no right to refrain from working? Whoever goes to war at his own expense, who plants a vineyard and does not eat of its fruit, or who tends a flock and does not drink of the milk of the flock? Do I say these things as a mere man, or does not the law say the same also? For it's written in the law of Moses, 'You shall not muzzle an ox while it treads out the grain.' Is it oxen God is concerned about, or does he say it altogether for our sakes? For our sakes, no doubt, this is written that he who plows should plow in hope, and he who threshes in hope should be a partaker of his hope." Go down to verse 14. "Even so, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should live from the gospel." So there's another possibility, is simply being supported by the people to whom he ministers. But that's not the only possibility. We see another one when Paul writes the next letter that we have recorded to the church at Corinth in 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Here's a third way that a person can be supported. In 2 Corinthians chapter 11, beginning in verse 8, this is what Paul writes. He's writing to the church at Corinth. This is the city that he's going to establish the church. Later, he's writing this letter to them. He says in verse 8, "I robbed other churches, taking wages from them to minister to you. And when I was present with you and in need, I was a burden to no one, for what I lacked, the brethren who came from Macedonia supplied. And in everything I kept myself from being burdensome to you, and so I will keep myself." So, depending on the situation, Paul said, well, sometimes I need to support myself. Sometimes the people to whom I'm working with need to support me. At other times, brethren from other places sent money to support him. And of course, this is what happens when Timothy and Silas come back here in the next few verses. That's what happens. So, from Paul's writings, by inspiration, we see all three different ways that someone preaching the gospel can be supported. Well, now notice what happens. In the next few verses, Paul meets with a tense situation. Beginning in verse 5 of Acts chapter 18, "When Silas and Timothy had come from Macedonia, Paul was compelled by the Spirit and testified to the Jews that Jesus is the Christ." Where had Timothy and Silas been? Well, apparently, Paul, prior to this, had sent them to go visit those Macedonian churches, Philippi, Thessalonica, Berea. Some apparently, Timothy apparently went to some of them. Silas had apparently went to some others. And when they return from those churches, they bring support. And that's what he was talking about there in those verses, where he said he had robbed other churches. Not literally robbed them, but he had taken support from other churches, like Philippi, like Thessalonica, like Berea, to help. And that's what Timothy and Silas bring back. They bring back support for Paul. They bring back financial aid. Well, when Timothy and Silas get back, that's when Paul writes his first letter to the church at Thessalonica. So, chronologically, that is what's happening. Paul is at Corinth. He's starting to preach the gospel. He's been a tent maker for a while. Doesn't say exactly how long. But still preaching the gospel every Sabbath, trying to reason with and persuade people. Then when Timothy and Silas come back and bring this support, then he sits down and writes that first letter to the church at Thessalonica. And of course, in that, talks about a number of things, especially about death and about the second coming of Christ. So what does Paul do? It says in verse 5 that he testified to the Jews that Jesus is the Christ. But notice what happens. But when they opposed him and blasphemed, they didn't oppose, they blasphemed. He shook his garments and said to them, "Your blood be upon your own heads. I'm clean. From now on I will go to the Gentiles." Paul's kind of saying, "Okay, I've had it with you," in common language. "Every Sabbath I've been coming here, reasoning with you, teaching, trying to persuade. And what's the response I get? Well, by and large, it was people blaspheming." That's about the worst thing you can possibly do. It says, now, it's your own fault if you're lost. That's what he's telling them. People today, of course, wouldn't say things like that. Well, they should. But that's what Paul's saying. Well, he says, I'm done. He says, I've tried and tried and tried. He says, now, your blood be upon your own heads. I'm clean. Well, what did Paul mean when he said he was clean? He had a responsibility to teach and preach to them. And he had done that repeatedly over and over and over again. Well, there comes a point where Paul says, I have to move on. Okay, you're not listening. You're not responding. You're not obeying. I can't waste my time with you anymore. There are other people who want to hear. So that's what Paul is saying. But this is really going back to an Old Testament principle. The prophet Ezekiel, in Ezekiel 33, says much the same thing. Again, by inspiration, here's what Ezekiel says in the 33rd chapter. Ezekiel 33, beginning at verse 1. "Again, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, speak to the children of your people and say to them, when I bring the sword upon a land, and the people of the land take a man from their territory and make him their watchman, when he sees the sword coming upon the land, if he blows the trumpet and warns the people, whoever hears the sound of the trumpet and does not take warning, if the sword comes and takes him away, his blood shall be as on his own head. He heard the sound of the trumpet, but did not take warning. His blood shall be upon himself, but he who takes warning will save his life. But if the watchman sees the sword coming and does not blow the trumpet, and the people are not warned, and the sword comes and takes any person from among them, he is taken away in his iniquity, but his blood I will require at the watchman's hand. So you, son of man, I have made you a watchman for the house of Israel. Therefore, you shall hear a word from my mouth and warn them for me. When I say to the wicked, O wicked man, you shall surely die, and you do not speak to warn the wicked from his way, that wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood I will require at your hand. Nevertheless, if you warn the wicked to turn from his way, and he does not turn from his way, he shall die in his iniquity, but you have delivered your soul." In other words, you're clean. That's what Paul is saying. Paul said, I have done my duty. I've tried and tried and tried. Little, if any, response. My hands are clean in this matter. So Paul said, now I'm primarily going to do what? I'm going to focus on the Gentiles. That's what he said. I'm going to focus on the Gentiles. So he departed from there and entered the house of a certain man named Justus, one who worshipped God, whose house was next door to the synagogue. Can you imagine that? Here's the Jewish synagogue. Next door is where Paul goes. Right next door. There was a man named Justus who worshipped God. So that's where he goes. He's been spending all his time here. Then he goes here. Well, that's not over. Then Crispus, the ruler of the synagogue, believed on the Lord with all his household, and many of the Corinthians hearing believed and were baptized. Well, the story just gets crazier. The head of the synagogue, this Jew, responded to the gospel. Of all people, you would not think he would, but he did. He did, and several of the Corinthians did. It doesn't say how many, but several. So there was some response. There is some fruit from his preaching. It's interesting when you read some of Paul's writings. Crispus, this one he mentions here, is one of the few people that Paul actually personally baptized. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, I think it's verse 14. So he mentioned this was something that stuck in Paul's mind, this Crispus. So many of them hearing believed and were baptized. Now, something I think is kind of strange in a sense, what he says in the next few verses to Paul. Now the Lord spoke to Paul in the night by a vision. Do not be afraid, but speak and do not keep silent, for I am with you, and no one will attack you to hurt you, for I have many people in this city. And he continued there a year and 6 months, teaching the word of God among them. He's not telling Paul, okay, Paul, you're not afraid now, and don't be afraid in the future. That's not what the original language says. The original language says, Paul, stop being afraid. Paul was afraid. Actually, word here, he was terrified. I can't imagine Paul ever being terrified, but he was terrified here in Corinth. Paul was terrified. And it was ongoing. He wasn't just terrified once or twice. And so God has to appear to him in a vision and say to him, stop being afraid. Stop being afraid. He was overwhelmed with fear. When he writes the first epistle we have to Corinth, notice what he says in 1 Corinthians chapter 2. Beginning in verse 1, he says, And I, brethren, when I came to you, did not come with excellence of speech or of wisdom, declaring to you the testimony of God, for I determined not to know anything among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. I was with you in weakness, in fear, and in much trembling. He was terrified to be in the city of Corinth. And so God appears to him in this vision and tells him why he needs to stop being afraid. Why? Because I am with you and no one will attack you, for I have many people in this city. So apparently his fear, his terror was so bad that this was the only thing that was going to help Paul through it. He probably wouldn't have made it through his time in Corinth if God hadn't appeared to him in a vision. Saying you've got to stop being afraid. So he stays there for a year and 6 months. During this year and 6 months after this happens, that's when he writes 2 Thessalonians. So he wrote 1 Thessalonians right after Timothy and Silas gets back. And then during this last period, he writes 2 Thessalonians. One more thing happens here in Corinth. He meets with a judge, beginning in verse 12. When Gallio was proconsul of Achaia, the Jews with one accord rose up against Paul and brought him to the judgment seat. saying, "This fellow persuades men to worship God contrary to the law." And when Paul was about to open his mouth, Gallio said to the Jews, "If it were a matter of wrongdoing or wicked crimes, O Jews, there would be reason why I should bear with you. But if it's a question of words and names and your own law, look to it yourselves, for I do not want to be a judge of such matters." And he drove them from the judgment seat. Then all the Greeks took Sosthenes, the ruler of the synagogue, and beat him before the judgment seat. But Gallio took no notice of these things. He was the chief judicial officer of that province. I mean, everything would eventually come to him if needed, as far as questions of the law, legal issues. And Corinth was the capital of Achaia, so that's naturally where he would be. He would be in the capital of that province because he was the chief judicial officer. Well, what happens? Some of the Jews do what? They took him and brought him to the judgment seat. This was a raised platform. It actually still exists in Corinth. I mean, you can actually go there today and see this platform that Paul was brought before. And this is where the judgments were given out, in this case by Gallio. And this, even though we only have a few verses here, this was an extremely important event that happens. And we don't want to neglect seeing what happens here. It was a very important event because Paul is being brought before a secular magistrate concerning religious matters. That's why it's so important. See, the Jews are bringing him up, dealing with religious charges. That's what they're all about. But he's a secular judge. Well, they didn't fool the judge. The judge is pretty smart. Because he says, if this had something to do with crimes or wrongdoing or so forth, I would listen to you. But he says, I've heard your charges against this man, and all that has to do is with your law, with your religious law. It has nothing to do with the Roman law. See, the Jews were arguing that Paul should be punished by the Roman government. But Gallio comes back and says, questions of religion were outside his jurisdiction. He says, so I'm having nothing to do with it. I'm not going to make a judgment on it. I'm not going to hear you because it has nothing to do with the state. That was his reply. He's telling them that teaching and following this Christian religion, this Christian doctrine, didn't violate Roman law. So he says, I'm not going to judge on it. It has nothing to do with the government. And that's why this was such an important event. Because we have here, by inspiration, what all legal systems should be about. And that's how Gallio, being apparently very bright, saw what the Jews were trying to do. And he says there has to be a separation between them. So, again, a very important event that takes place here. Paul, we have a hard time believing he was afraid and scared and terrified at times, but he was. But he went ahead and did it anyway. And that's one of the most important lessons to get. Even though he was scared, and maybe even more than that, terrified, he said he came with them in fear and trembling. He still, every Sabbath, went and taught. He was even brought before the highest official in the province, kept on teaching and preaching. And I think that's a lesson we need to take. We've got to keep on doing what we're supposed to do, whether it's inviting our neighbor or talking to our friend or giving a DVD to a family member, whatever. Like Paul, we can't be afraid. And the worst thing they're going to do is say, no, I'm not interested. So that's why we have to keep doing it. We have to be just like Paul. this morning, if there is a need in your heart to respond to the gospel in any way, for whatever reason, we want you to do that as we stand and sing. Let's stand, please. We'll go.